Welcome to the bonus Q&A for episode 42, everybody.
Hello. Now you sound a little bit better than when we recorded on Monday.
Yes, health update number one. I am improving. Voice is still not completely back, but it definitely feels a lot better. Every morning is an exercise in phlegm expulsion, which is disgusting. But as I told you, oddly satisfying.
The human body is a miraculous thing. But you know that when the phlegm comes, you're almost going to get better, which is a good sign. So
let's hope so.
Better out than in is what I say.
I saw a comment from somebody saying that I would need to skip the Game Awards.
I have to go alone?
Which
solo show for Krista? Okay.
I mean, we're leaving. We're recording this on a Thursday. We're leaving next Wednesday. I expect to be quite recovered by then.
I think you should be fully recovered by this weekend at the very latest.
Fit as a fiddle.
Oh, a fiddle.
Yes.
Why do they say that?
I don't know.
I don't really get that phrase.
Old-timey.
It's an old-timey phrase that doesn't make any sense.
But you are going to continue. Maybe this is a new tradition of you reading questions. I don't know.
I'm a bad reader, I feel like. You're a much better reader than
That's
I am.
That's why so I do
try
it.
I will try my best.
I'm going to watch you squirm. All right.
Here we go. First question from Riven, asker of questions. How do you feel about Fire Emblem Engage? We haven't seen much yet, of course. It seems like it might be kind of a generic in the story department. There's a bad dragon. You're the good guys. Beat up the bad dragon. I really hope there's more to it than that. What do you two think? Yeah. What do you think? You are not super jazzed about.
No, I'm still not.
You're not super jazzed. Okay.
And I this game comes out in January. Can you believe that?
No.
Yeah, I was thinking we might be getting, you know, a Fire Emblem Engage Direct maybe around the end of the year or soonish. But yeah, I'm just not feeling this one. It feels a little fillery to me, and it's hard for me to put my finger on why.
Yeah.
I think graphically the game looks amazing. I love the look of the game. I love how colorful it is, but yeah, it might have something to do with like bringing back all of these characters from the previous games. I still really don't like the look, that like blue and red.
The split. Dual Joy-Con look.
Yeah, I don't love that. But I'm always eager to learn more about it, and I'm willing to have my mind changed. But as of now, I might be skipping.
I was really surprised also that it was coming out so soon. I feel like I had thought it was going to be a spring game, but like maybe March, April. So I'm curious as to why there hasn't been a lot of info on this game, even though it's coming out in about, you know, a month or so. So that makes me question a bit about how much, like what is this game about? Is there a lot of new stuff, or does it just kind of feel a bit generic? And I think that's a good kind of, that's sort of my feeling as well, is it feels a little generic. It doesn't feel like it has any sort of new hook that I would be interested for a Fire Emblem game. So yeah, I'm not excited either. I feel like it just not been on my radar at all. So maybe it can be on my radar if Nintendo will release a thing or two about this game.
And you've been a really massive Fire Emblem
fan. I'm a huge Fire Emblem fan.
With this kind of restart of the series with Awakening.
Yeah. I am a huge diehard Fire Emblem fan. I've played all of the ones, all the recent ones, you know, the different, I've done all the paths for three houses. I did the DLC. Yeah. So I don't know. I honestly forgot about this game. So maybe that's part of it. I've been pretty preoccupied with other stuff, and I haven't really been thinking about this game. So maybe, again, if there's more stuff that's going to be released about it, it'd get me a little bit more excited. But yeah, I just don't know what to expect, and it doesn't feel new or exciting to me. So yeah. We shall see. All right. Next question is from Tefu. Hey, Chris and Kai. Key? Anyways. Oh, Cry and Key. Interesting. I like this.
It's like we're down to a single syllable, except my one syllable got chopped even more.
Yeah, exactly. I have a question regarding your feeling of game releases nowadays compared to the days at Nintendo. I would imagine that I would be super excited in-house when a game is releasing, when as a consumer, I would just wait for the game to release, but with a different ignorant feeling. I would love to hear how you felt the game release, how you felt the game releases during 2022 that you had not been aware of compared to the releases in during 2021 and before. Love you all the way from Finland. Wonderful. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
You know, Nintendo puts out so many games that honestly not every launch feels special. And maybe that's like a bummer to say, but it's true. Yeah. Because there's so many. There's like 30 a year.
It's true.
They do have some though where they go all out and like they'll have like a little special like lunch that everybody eats and they celebrate, or they'll have like little tchotchkes that they'll give out, and you can feel a big sense of accomplishment for a big launch of like, wow, we made it. You know, we hopefully achieved this goal that has now been reset. and now we're failures. But yeah, there's definitely others where it's just another day ending in Y and you move on with your life. But now, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot more sense of discovery because we don't know everything that's in these games going into it. We're sort of playing them alongside you, which is fun. We can sort of share in that conversation versus before there were a lot of games that we would finish before they would even come out. That was always a good feeling.
Yeah, I think that's so true about Nintendo's like crazy launch calendar. And a lot of the times game launches were just sort of a sense of like, thank God I can check this off my list so I can move on to the other 20 projects that I'm deeply working on. And it's just one less thing to do. So this game is out. Like we can just, thank goodness, like we can check it off. Even though that's not always the case because there's always some sort of other, like if the game is not doing as well as Nintendo hopes, there's always like some panic campaign that's like, we got to move more units, people. What are the ideas? And that's always annoying. But most of the time it was just a relief to get a game out there and move on to the next, you know, project. We were always so busy there. I actually really prefer to be just a consumer, honestly, again. It was great working within, you know, Nintendo, and I really liked it, but it does take away from this thing that I love being my hobby. You know, it's like for a long time, and even now, I can't play Smash because it gives me really, I have like PTSD from launching that game. Or like when I was working on Skyward Sword, I was spoiled from, I had to read the rollout of the game, like the story, and I wasn't able to experience it. I begged the Treehouse person for Fire to not tell me the story for Fire Emblem because I was working on that game, but I was like, please just tell me what I absolutely need to know. Like if it's something that I don't need to know, can you just not tell me? Because I just really want to experience this as a normal person. And that was always like really hard to balance working at Nintendo. And now don't have to deal with that anymore at all, which is really awesome. I get to like play these games and enjoy it. And not be spoiled because I'm working on it and not be traumatized because I'm working on it. And I just get to play them and have fun. And it's so much better. So I quite enjoy it more than when I was at Nintendo. All right. Next question from Frulio.
And we got to shout out Frulio because Frulio moved up to the notification squad. Whoop, whoop. And Frulio is one of our most prolific question askers. This is great news for Frulio because it means we can answer more questions from Frulio.
Exactly. That's very exciting. We're excited to have you here in this new tier. You have a great question to celebrate your indoctrination into this new tier. So here we go. who came up with the touching is good slogan for Nintendo DS? And who thought it was a good idea? Oh, boy.
Now, this predates me. So I'm hoping that you know something about this because I know
nothing. I do know. Oh. I do know. I know. Oh. So this is very, very early days for me. I was still pretty new at Nintendo at the time. This was 100% an advertising team-led campaign. And sometimes the ad team does this, and they do it, you know, less less now and definitely less like towards the end of our tenure at Nintendo. But in these early days when advertising, like traditional, you know, TV magazine, like ads were like so popular, it was always sort of the ad team that was doing these kinds of big campaigns, and they would always have some sort of tagline to go along with a game or a hardware. And this one was extremely unfortunate because, I mean, obviously it was about the touchscreen, so I kind of get sort of why they were going there, but it is just very awkward and cringy. The other thing that was also really weird that was alongside the slogan was the actual like advertisements, the actual print ads that they did, which was this Kirby. So family-friendly podcast, and keep this very PC, but just imagine a pink Kirby. And then there was a stylus that was dragging the pink Kirby upwards. So it made a shape that didn't look great.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A shape of something that may not be great to couple along with the line, touching is good, is what I'll say.
I'm going to have to look this up.
Yeah, it was awkward. I don't think it lasted very long, though. I think people realized that it was kind of weird, and then they came up with a new tagline for Nintendo DS. But there was a couple of strange DS ad campaigns in those early days, for sure.
It's not hard to find, you know, until very recently, a lot of game ads were super cringy and embarrassing. And I would put this in that category. And Nintendo was not immune to this either. There's the infamous Mario with the tattoo because of the like tribal design on the Game Boy Advance. There are others. It's just like in poor taste. And like, we're not even mentioning ads out of Europe, which are a whole other level.
Yeah.
So it is nice that video game advertising has kind of gotten its mind out of the gutter, so to speak, and is actually like a bit more focused on, you know, the values of the product rather than just trying to like be attention grabbing for any dumb reason.
Yeah, there was also that time when Nintendo was trying to be like edgy. Yeah. And that was weird. It was like the font and like the slogans.
The Play It Loud era was one of my least favorite eras of Nintendo, because I was like, this is not what this company's about.
Exactly. It just felt so off brand.
You know who I blame for that? Sega.
Oh.
Sonic Wii. We'll go into that.
Back them into a corner to be.
We're less than 1,000 subscribers away from Sonic Wii Capital.
I know. That's kind of crazy. I can't believe it's finally upon us. Sonic Week is coming for sure. All right. Great question as always, Frulio. Silly Ferret.
This next question, I got to say, I sort of sat on this one for a couple weeks because I was like, I'm not sure I completely understand the question, but I think I do. So let's give it a shot.
Okay. Here we go. Bonjour to both of you from Montreal. Wow, that's exciting. I would like to know what your opinions are V-Pets outside of traditional video game consoles. Tamagotchi, Digimon, Tuma Pets, which I've never
heard of. I'm not familiar with that one.
Did you have / want or have you ever wanted one during the Tamagotchi hype? Also, did you consider running one of these for a challenge? Would you keep this pet alive for a longer time? I bet Krista would succeed better. Haha. I feel like we need to dissect the question a little bit. So the question is about how do we feel about sort of virtual pets that are not in video games? So not like a Nintendog, but like hardware.
That's how I interpreted this. Okay. Virtual pets such as Tamagotchi.
Yeah, I get that. I'm a huge fan. I loved Tamagotchis, and I had so many. I would love another Tamagotchi, actually. I would totally take care of it. I had so many Tamagotchis in that Tamagotchi era.
Oh, really?
I remember having like multiple because I wanted different like cases, like different designs for the little egg that the Tamagotchi would come in. But yeah, I am a fan of this like virtual pet kind of thing. I mean, now it's really easy because you could do it on your phone, I guess, and it'd be a little bit more like you're already carrying your phone around. So why do you need like a separate thing to have one? But there's something very like, it almost makes you feel like it's more real when it's like its dedicated little thing. Like when I had that Tamagotchi egg and like I would take care of that little chicken and stuff, it was like, I felt like a real genuine love for this inanimate object and creature.
Wow.
And I think it's because it was like separate from, you know, being in a video game, being in the console that you also do other things or like on your phone. Because again, like it felt like that object was kind of embodying this like relationship that you have, like this care that you want to give this virtual creature. So I kind of want to have that again. I think that's pretty cool.
Could you beat Tamagotchi? Like the bird turns 18 and moves out?
No.
No?
It's forever.
It's just like, perpetually.
Perpetually.
But you can't like game over where it dies, right?
Mine died, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't take care of it because I stopped playing. And then like it died. It like starved to death.
Whoa.
Isn't that sad?
I did have a Tamagotchi. I mean, those were a huge phenomenon.
So popular.
And there were all sorts of like cheap knockoffs too. But I think I had a real like legit Tamagotchi.
I had the original Tamagotchi, yeah.
And it was fun. It was cool. It was a good thing. And I think those are still around. Like, I'm not sure they've changed that much over the years.
I don't know who's playing with them. I hope they have, like, a resurgence. Is there some sort of, like, TikTok trend that we can kick off for, like, the Y2K Gen Zers that are obsessed with Y2K culture that we can bring back to Tamagotchi hype? Because I would be all over that.
Tuma pets. That's one that we need a bit more of an explainer on, though.
I think they should do Pokemon Tamagotchi.
Sure.
Like it's just a ball.
Like and a Pokewalker. You do it with a Pokewalker. Bring back the Pokewalker.
Bring back the Pokewalker. That reminded me of a Tamagotchi because you kind of carry
Stop it wasting around. Our time and put out the Pokewalker.
With these glitches Jeez. That they're going to patch and bring us the Pokewalker. That'd be cool. Like a ball with your starter in it that you could take care of. That'd be cool, right? That'd be a great – I would buy that. All right. Next question from Sharif Jackson. Hey, Krista and Kit. I was wondering if either of you have gotten into D&D or other tabletop systems. I've gotten into a few years ago. I never realized how many video games are based on its fundamentals, especially role-playing games.
I'm super intrigued by D&D. I've bought a number of D&D sets over the years. But I've never really been able to get into it just because of like the whole aspect of like, oh, we got to get a group together and it's like big time commitment to do a party. So again, in my retirement, this is one of my aspirations is to get into tabletop gaming like this. I did get a few years ago, there was kind of like a coffee table book that was about the history of D&D, which I read through like in its entirety. It was super fascinating. And it's true. There are so many things from D&D that are just commonplace and, you know, video games or other games, just gaming in general, even like pop culture, you know, now that like fantasy is so mainstream, you see it all over the place. Also like Cyberpunk, like I bought the rule book of the tabletop game for that recently. And, you know, I've been reading through that and been fascinated by it. I would love to actually, you know, play it at some point. But again, it's just been a bit out of reach for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm super interested in tabletop gaming. Like the Warhammer stuff always looks, whenever I'm at like a game store, I'm always peeking over at the guys people playing Warhammer. And I'm like fascinated by painting the tiny little figures. And I so would want to do that if I had nothing else going on in my life and had time to do it. Because it is a big time commitment and you have to dedicate like a lot of, you know, room to have this out. But yeah, I also like, I really want to actually have like a group of people that play D&D. And like, I feel like it's really, I think it's really hard to find like someone to be like a great dungeon master, all that stuff. Like, I don't even know how to go about finding something like that. Like, how do people even get started? I feel like that's like something that I would be interested in doing, but I just don't know where to go.
Yeah.
like, who is going to take me in as like this noob, you know, to like explain how to play this game?
Nobody wants to.
That's what I'm saying. Like that, I feel like it's very hard to find that. So hopefully one day that will be something that I'll be able to do, but I would love to. I think it would be awesome. All right, we're back to Riven with a very hard-hitting question. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Do you eat a hamburger instead of turkey on Thanksgiving? Do you plant a tree instead of getting a Christmas tree? Do you decorate your home for Easter? In general, do you have any unusual holiday traditions? Do you get a live Christmas tree, use a fake one, or have no tree? Oh, there's a lot of questions here. A lot of questions.
Well, I guess the meat of this is, do you have any unusual holiday traditions? I wouldn't say I do. But I think we're both believers in this one thing, which is something we'd recommend people to do, which is if you're going to have a Christmas tree, get more than one. Oh, right? More than
one. Yes.
Yeah. So my house has two stories. I have one on each story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on your living space, you can get one for, you know, a main shared room, or get a smaller one for your bedroom. Mm-hmm. You're talking about getting a second one for this office that you're in right now.
I was going to put it right there with this chair.
You don't have it yet.
Currently, there's a dog there.
So I don't think you're actually going to go through with it, but this will maximize your festivity.
Yeah. I'm all about decorating and all that stuff for all the holidays. I love decorating my house and making it, especially around Christmas time, and making it really festive. I did have a second Christmas tree that I just brought into our studio. We're going to set that up for our set for the next couple of videos. And that's going to be very festive. I have sort of, we've had a tradition. We had a little Christmas office tradition actually. Before, when we used to work at Nintendo, we had offices right next to each other. So I would have the tree that will now be in our studio in my office, and you'd come in and help me set it up. And then we would put like all of these Nintendo ornaments on it. And then you had a really cute little like Christmas tree in a box. It was like a paper tree.
Well, it was something that I found on our little communal free table at Nintendo that somebody was just going to give away or
throw out.
And I snagged that, and it's just like you can assemble it in like 5 minutes, but it's like a little foot tall.
It's cute.
Tree made out of cardboard, and it's very cute.
Yeah, and then we would set that up in your office, and so people would have like sort of festive offices around Christmas time, which was really nice. Unusual holiday traditions. I honestly was not a big like Thanksgiving person growing up because I'm Chinese, and that was not like part of my mom's like cooking repertoire, like making a turkey or whatever. I feel like as I got older and we had like bigger Thanksgiving gatherings, we've done more traditional Thanksgiving food, but my Thanksgiving is not really like turkey stuffing, mashed potatoes. It's always been like Chinese food. So I guess that may be like a bit unusual. I didn't eat a hamburger, but I definitely ate like noodles on Thanksgiving.
I have one unusual tradition that we'll answer with the next question, but to Riven's first question, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? I would say no. Mm. Not every movie, including Christmas, is automatically a Christmas movie. It doesn't mean I don't like it. So it's like you could apply this to games too. Is Miles Morales a Christmas game? No, but it takes place around Christmas.
Right, right. Time frame wise, it has kind of a seasonal vibe to it. My favorite Christmas movie is Home Alone, I think.
Yeah.
And I watched that decorating my Christmas tree just last week. So that was really nice. All right. Next question from Uncharted 95. Hey, Kit and Krista. This is aimed towards Kit, since God of War Ragnarok and God of War 2018 focuses on Norse mythology in Scandinavia, the Nordic countries, history / tales. My question is, how much in touch are you with your Swedish roots? Where in Sweden does your family come from? And do you have Swedish citizenship? Can you serenade us with some Swedish? Kind regards from a fellow Scandinavian from Denmark. Wow.
Look at how cosmopolitan we are with these questions.
We've had so many wonderful
Finland, Montreal, Denmark.
Denmark.
We've got an Australia coming up.
Oh, this is so fabulous. I want to visit all of you in your home countries.
Yes.
Go on a grand tour one day.
So this is interesting. There's some things that I was pretty plugged into and some things I really wasn't and kind of had to seek out on my own. So this is the tradition. My family always did a very traditional Christmas Eve dinner, which included a lot of like traditional Swedish foods that you would eat. And even this other thing that we would do at the beginning, which was called Dapa Greta. I'm sure the pronunciation's terrible on that. I don't, that's another question. I don't speak Swedish. I don't know Swedish, unfortunately. But that's like recreating the famine time. So you would take like a piece of bread and like dunk it in this broth and eat this boiled sausage. And that's like, this is what people were eating in the famine era.
Oh no, and they were hungry.
And you would sing a song and then you would go eat the real dinner. So it's like, we got to appreciate, you know, the hard times before you can have the good times. Yeah, we sang all these drinking songs. There are a couple of those that I like know by heart. Again, I'm sure the pronunciation is terrible.
Sing it for us.
We should have some sort of a collective singing later.
I don't know the song.
I think that would be a fun way to do it. So that was the one thing that I was super plugged into year after year. I have an aunt in my family who actually wrote a book. She's one of these people who like married and divorced like a dozen times in her life, often to very wealthy men. So she wrote all of these books, and she wrote one that was kind of a recounting of the family history, which I have, and I've tried to read it a couple times, but it's extremely dry and I always put it down, and I should just force myself to go through it. And that would probably help me get a better understanding. I do know my family is from a city in Sweden called Bollnäs, which is, I think, north of Stockholm, not super far, but I understand my family was like furriers, like fur trappers back in the day before they came over. And I know the first family member came to America about 100 years ago. We know that. And just recently I made some connections with some of the family that's still in Sweden. So it's kind of a work in progress, but something I'm eager to, you know, keep working on.
You should learn Swedish.
Seems challenging.
Seems hard. It does seem really hard. Well, we hope that one day you will teach us a Swedish drinking song.
Yeah.
And your aunt sounds like my hero. So.
She also wrote a book called, Men Are Not Cost Effective, which was about like, well, if you look at who's in jail, it's 99% men. So they're costing all of us all this money.
Like tax dollars.
Because they're the ones who are in jail. And I haven't read that one. I'll be honest.
When I grow up, I hope I can be like just
I'll let you do the book report on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Next question from Jordan Collette. Current favorite snack. What you got?
I'm going to share an unpopular opinion here. I don't really like snacks.
You don't like
snacks. I don't do snacks, really.
I don't do snacks.
I prefer to save my eating for main meals so I can just go all out and, you know, eat my fill, so to speak. And I find that, you know, the times I do snack, I'll end up having a less enjoyable meal as a result. So I just don't eat that stuff.
Spoiling your appetite?
Exactly. Spoiling my dinner.
Spoiling your dinner. You're very traditional in some ways. I like to snack. Let's see. I really like currently these, I don't remember what they're called now, but they're these dark chocolate covered strawberries. And it's so delicious. And if I'm like, I always feel like after I eat or in the afternoon when I'm about to drink like tea or coffee or something, I need something sweet. So I feel like these are like maybe a little bit healthier than like a cookie or something. So I've been eating those a lot.
Again, going back to the last question, I did introduce you to the great Scandinavian tradition of fika, which is taking a break from your work to get a coffee and a little snack.
Yes, we would do that very
multiple times a day.
At work, yes. We would always take a 10-minute break to get coffee.
Right.
Which is right. I do that now, obviously. At home it's very easy to take a 10-minute break to get coffee, but yeah, I like to have a little like sweet snack. My mom just brought us some snacks. She was in Japan on holiday, and she just came back with a stack of Japanese sweets. She gave some to me, and I think she gave you some as well. What did you get? You got some sort of Kyoto chocolate?
Sounds like a chocolate mochi.
Oh, and I got a green tea mochi. I'm a mochi fan though, so that's another favorite snack for sure. Okay, switching it up underscore.
There's so many food questions to bring up the back half of this Q&A. The next two go together, so you should read them together.
Okay, so the first is from switching it up underscore. I didn't do it the first time, sorry. Hey, K&K, how's things? A bit of a fun one this week. What is the one meal your parents cooked when growing up that is still your favorite meal to have at a family dinner? When I grew up, my mom made lasagna, and to this day, nothing compares. I ask for it every time we have dinner. Ooh, that sounds good. And then next question, piggyback from Simon. I want to piggyback onto this one and ask, is there any recipe you learned from your parents, adapted, and improved yourself? And now you kind of don't like how it was done originally at home. I'm sure that happens to me a lot. All right. First question, though. Favorite meal?
I think my mom definitely gave me a good love and appreciation of like cooking on the grill outside. I have a lot of great memories of like summertime. I'll be in like the pool and my mom will be there, you know, working the grill, cooking like a burger or a steak or something. So that's something I love to do, you know, at home now. And I think I got that from her. I will say a lot of her cooking, and she would not be upset at me saying this, is very like straightforward. You know, she was a working mom, didn't have a ton of time, but still, you know, was the person doing that day after day. So it was very like no frills in most cases. But when she had a bit of more time, like on the weekends, she would do something a bit more elaborate.
My mom is a fantastic cook, and I think I learned a lot of cooking from her. And I think I come from like a big like cooking family. Like her sister is, and my mom would not be offended if I said this either, is probably a better cook than my mom, which is saying quite a lot.
Really?
My mom is an amazing cook, and her sister, like whenever I would visit family in China, like my first meal would always be at my aunt's house, my mom's sister's house, and she would lay down like it. Oh my gosh, it's incredible. My grandmother was also a really good cook, and I have really fond memories. So a lot of these recipes really come from, they're like family recipes. But one thing that my mom makes and sort of everyone in the family makes is these cold noodles, and this is what I usually have on holidays like Thanksgiving, Christmas. You've had them before too, I think. But they're really simple. It's sort of a traditional dish from where I'm from in China, in Sichuan. And I always ask for it whenever we have like a big family dinner. I cannot make it. It sounds so simple, but for some reason, when I make it, it doesn't taste the same. So that's one where I don't know what I'm going to do if I don't have her around to make those for me, because I can't make them. But the second question, the recipe that you learned from your parents and adopted and improved yourself, what do you have for that?
I'll be honest. There's probably many. And again, I might sound like I'm full of myself or I'm putting down her cooking. But again, it was very straightforward. And I think I've got the edge. So I'm glad to now cook those things for her.
Yes,
to reciprocate. All tens and thousands of days that she cooked for me.
That's nice.
Yeah.
For me, my mom, I feel like as I got older and as she's gotten older, our taste buds had like a little switcheroo.
Oh.
Like when I was younger, I would eat, like I wouldn't be able to eat things that were like as spicy or like as like strong seasonings. And now it's like the, so she would make stuff for me that was like maybe potentially like a little bit more bland, or like the flavors were a little bit more mild, for my taste when I was younger. Now I like things like extremely spicy and like super, super seasoned. Like I can just eat a whole block of salt at this point. Like, you know, I'm like the salt queen. I'm sure it's bad for me, but whatever. And she has really like her taste buds have like sort of reverted to when I was like a child. So she like cannot eat spicy things anymore. She used to be able to eat spicy things like nobody's business, but now she's like kind of weakened on the spicy things. So sometimes I feel like the recipes that she makes, they're a little under seasoned. Like she has, she makes mapo tofu, which I also made. I learned the recipe from her, but I need to season it like way more now to make it actually taste like spicy and numbing, which is like the whole point of that dish. And I feel like she under seasons now because she can't eat it anymore. So I kind of like my version better, even though I learned that dish from her.
Hmm. Are you maybe putting your yourself on a path to become like she is now by going so all out?
I don't know, but I'm going to enjoy it while I can, because I really, right. I really love, I love spicy food, and I hope that I'll always be able to eat it. I have an aunt, who, her and I have very similar like eating habits and tastes, and she's now in her like late 60s, and she can throw down a spicy challenge right now, and she has not slowed down at all in her spicy eating. So I hope to be like her in my old age. all right. Next question from
the last question.
Oh, is that the last one? I was trying to scroll. From Prince Charmless. Hello, K and K. This is another food question. Wow.
It sure
do
is.
I like this. Do you like to eat at Panda Express? If so, do you always choose the same item on the menu or do you change it from time to time? My go-to is fried rice, teriyaki chicken, and walnut shrimp. Sometimes I change it to orange chicken and kung pao chicken. I do like Panda Express. I'm a fan.
So I held on to this belief as I was like, people of Chinese descent must think Panda Express is a joke. And I kind of had to work up the courage to ask people, including yourself, of like, am I right? And they all said, you're absolutely wrong. Panda Express is great.
It's the best.
It's not authentic, but it's different and it's good.
Yeah. It's like a different genre of food.
Right.
It's like when you go to Chipotle, you're not having Mexican food.
Yeah.
You're having Chipotle. When you go to Panda Express, you're not having like traditional Chinese food. You're having Panda Express. So like when I say like, oh, I have a craving for Chinese food, I probably mean like real, you know, traditional Chinese food. But then I will also get cravings for specifically Panda Express. And I will want to eat that. So it's like a whole other genre for me. And yes, my go-to order is fried rice. I like their eggplant tofu and also the kung pao chicken. That's usually what I get there.
Yeah, I like the Good Prince's secondary order. You got to go with some of the hits when you're going to Panda Express. I got to admit, I don't know where a Panda Express is around here. I feel like most of my memories are in the Seattle airport.
I think we had a lot of Panda Express.
That was always like one of the go-to eating options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I haven't been having it as much now that we're not going to Seattle as often. You know, we should ask Reggie this question because he obviously worked at Panda Express.
I know. We forgot to ask him.
A great section in his book about his time at Panda Express that was really interesting.
It's so cool that he came from like food industry too. Like that's so interesting. I have a very like sticky memory of Panda Express where you and I were coming back from San Diego Comic-Con. Our flight got delayed for like almost like 7 hours, something crazy, like 6-7 hours. And I remember we were like wandering around the airport and I was like so hungry and annoyed and cranky. And then we found a Panda Express and I was so happy. I was like, thank God there's at least one thing that's like good here that we could eat and try to like pass the time a little bit. Cause it was like dire straits at that point.
Yeah.
So Panda Express saved the day that day. All right. Wow.
I think we talked more food than games, but that's all right.
That's all right. Yeah. I love food. It's my second most favorite thing in the world. So I think that's it. Yes,
it is.
Bonus Q&A.
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.